And I think potentially the most relevant part is thinking about these kind of exemptions and maximizing that, just to try and get that value of the estate down by maximizing that every year. You know, small gifts are quite useful. Annual exemption of £2,000 plus the carryover if you haven't used it. So just these little things to think about starting the conversation. It probably doesn't sit right with a lot of, it probably wouldn't sit right with me if I approached my parents tomorrow and was like, okay, come on then, what am I owed and stuff like that. But it's just a really important thing to think about.
Yeah. I come from an Indian family, and like, they're quite not obsessed with death, but it's not really a difficult subject for us to talk about. So like, I think I find it's easier in my family, for example, to approach that subject. And my dad's a chartered accountant as well. So for him, he sees it quite pragmatically. So having that conversation, I think in my family might be just a lot easier than it might be in your family.
The Medics Money podcast helps doctors, dentists, and other professionals make better financial decisions. Hosted by myself, Dr. Tommy Perkins, a GP.
And by me, Dr. Ed Cantelow, a GP, but also a chartered accountant and chartered tax advisor.
This podcast is for general information only and does not constitute any form of advice, and tax allowances and rates are subject to change.
Hello, everybody. I'm Syra. I'm one of the hosts at Medics Money, and it's lovely to have you back. We're here on our podcast with one of our co-hosts, Matthew, and I have the pleasure of asking Matthew all about inheritance tax. So Matthew, would you mind introducing yourself?
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me on. And hi, everyone. Matthew, you definitely probably run into me across Medics Money and what medical school doesn't teach us. I'm one of the co-hosts here and technically a qualified independent financial advisor.
Congratulations on that. I know it was really hard work. Very well deserved.
That it was.
So inheritance tax. We have a wide range of medical students and doctors at all different stages of their life listening to our podcasts. Why do you think inheritance tax is an important topic for lots of different people to know about, not just people who might be a bit further along their line?
Yeah, I think it's just something, especially a topic and a tax that I think it may be a bit of a hidden one, especially when you're younger. You're not kind of fully aware of these kind of, I guess, like pensions and IHT, further down the line, these kind of like issues that come up later in life. And I think it's never too early to start thinking about these things. And to be honest, like you said, off air, Syra, starting this conversation, thinking about these issues, I mean, parents, everyone's got parents and grandparents, and they start to, as time marches on, it's important to kind of think about these things further down the line.
Absolutely. Given that we'll talk about this a bit further, but there are these thresholds, whether you pay inheritance tax or not, and they've been frozen, which means that as the value of homes, for example, and other assets increase exponentially in a lot of cases, they start to come into this threshold and start to cross the threshold when they didn't previously. And given that it's frozen, it means that as time passes on, these assets increase in value and more of them are likely to come under the IHT rules, which is why we thought we'd do this episode.
Tommy and I'd like to talk about it. What are they called? It's like a stealth tax or a fiscal drag, that's it, where they freeze the allowances. So technically they make more tax revenue through the appreciation of your estate, of your house, even though by all looks and appearances, nothing's really changed, but in actual fact, it has. And they do this kind of with income tax as well, as you probably heard on the main podcast.
Did you know that the tax-free dividend allowance used to be £5,000?
5,000? Isn't it going down to 1,500?
Only a few years ago, it was £5,000, and then it came down to £2,000, and now it's gone down to £1,000. So this is not only just fiscal drag, this is just full-on fiscal, I don't know.
Robbery.
Yeah, exactly.
Drowning.
So inheritance tax, there are a few terms that you should be familiar with, get your head round. So what does estate mean, Matt?
Yeah, so broadly speaking, and we're just going to cover the basics. As we said, this conversation can never start too early, and we're just going to get everyone on the level playing field. So within the realms of inheritance tax, estate simply refers to the collected assets, house, savings, all that stuff that a person owns when they pass away. And that kind of equates to a value. And we'll talk about how that relates to all the thresholds that we previously alluded to. I think just as a broad concept, inheritance tax refers to the tax due when someone dies and they pass this estate down. Again, it might seem really obvious, but we're just making sure everyone's fully clear what these terms mean, because there's a lot of jargon floating around. So in relation to the thresholds, like we talked about earlier, the primary one you're going to want to know about is called the nil rate band. It's a little bit similar to the personal allowance in terms of technically it's a threshold where there's a 0% rate of tax applied. So the nil rate band has been, as we said earlier, frozen for many years now. I want to say at least 4 years, if not more, and frozen still till probably 28. And this nil rate band, the 0% tax rate, applies to the value of the estate up to £325,000. So for the first £325,000 of assets, savings, all that good stuff from an estate is going to be taxed at a nil rate up to that value. Anything after that point is going to be taxed at 40%. Okay, that's the rate for inheritance tax as of recording. The first little stipulation that you need to know about, again, these are more to raise awareness than anything you need to take note of or do, but the rate is reduced to 36% if 10% of the estate is left to charity, registered charity in the UK. There's also a hidden rate on lifetime transfers, which we can kind of describe as payments into most of the trusts, except bear trusts, where everything over £325,000, that nil rate band is taxed at 20%. So that's going to come up later. We're going to talk about chargeable lifetime transfers. The final thing to note then of these kind of rates and thresholds is we've got something called a residence nil rate band. Now that applies when a property is passed down from a deceased to one or more of their descendants, and they have to obviously have owned the property at some point and used it as a residence. And that is an additional £175,000. So that kind of creates a total threshold, total, you know, tax-free rate of £500,000 for an individual. Further to this, there's a kind of a couple more stipulations to be aware of here. We need to note that the residence nil rate band, that gets clawed back. So much like you might have heard on the main podcast, if you earn over, I think, £100,000 or £125,000, your personal allowance starts to get clawed back. In that same way, if your estate is valued at over £2 million, then your residence nil rate band at £175,000 is going to get clawed back by £1 for every £2 you go over that £2 million in the estate. So that includes your house primarily and all the savings, all the assets that are encapsulated therein.
And there is another little caveat, isn't there, about combining nil rate bands for married couples?
Yeah, and they can be transferred. Yeah, so let's just imagining that one spouse or civil partner dies having some spare nil rate band or resident nil rate band. Obviously, that gets transferred to the spouse free of tax, but also the kind of percentage, the amount of unused nil rate band and residence nil rate band is also transferred to the other spouse or civil partner. So that means, theoretically, on the death of the first partner, there could be a maximum zero rate of tax on £1 million of the estate. We have to note that you can only transfer it if you were married or in a civil partnership at the time of the first death. So that's quite an important part to note.
Are there any transfers that are exempt?
Yeah, there are a couple of transfers that are exempt, actually. So we've previously mentioned gifts between spouses or civil partners. They're absolutely exempt. I'm going to cover a few of them. There are more, but I don't want to spend the whole episode listing these out. So another important one is something called a small gift. And essentially that means it's a gift of the value of £250 or less. And that can be made to any individual donor, just the once up to that value, but can be made unlimited times to separate donors. So you can give away £250 to, you know, each of the grandkids if you have them free of IHT.
Is this
IHT.
Per year?
Yeah, per
or
year.
Just ever.
No, I think per year, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, wedding gifts are also exempt from the estate. And these actually vary based on your relationship to those being wed. So the maximum is 5,000 if you're a parent of the, what's the word? It's bride or groom, I guess. Yeah. Bride or bride. Groom or groom. I don't know. Exactly. Of the weds. Yep. Yeah, exactly. Of the newlyweds. 2,500 if you are giving a gift to your spouse before the wedding, so you can't do it afterwards, so you get that limit. Or if you're a grandparent, so that's 2,500 each for each of those cases. And lastly, 1,000 if you're anyone else. So that is those exemptions. You also get an annual exemption, and that is £3,000 of gifts. You can actually use that as part of a larger gift. So if you wanted to give away a car, for instance, you can offset that for the kind of first 3,000 and that will pass out of your estate, no questions asked. And you can actually also carry that over, only for the year though, only for 1 year. So if you don't ever give gifts away, you probably most likely have £6,000 allowance, which is actually what my grandparents did as a bit of a trivia a couple of years ago now. Mm-hmm. And there are some more, but I'm going to leave it there. We don't want to go too much of a deep dive into all of them. One thing I think is important to mention, though, is the kind of giving of these gifts. And there's a few different terms that we need to be aware of here. So the first is the cumulative principle. And this is related to how they calculate the tax due. So let's imagine that you gave a gift in 1 year, or someone gave a gift in 1 year, and they died a couple of years later. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, from an IHT perspective, they're going to investigate the value of your estate plus all of the gifts that you've given in the past 7 years to add on to your estate. And we'll cover that more as part of potential exempt transfers. And it's also important to note that if any gift has happened in these last 7 years, they also look at the previous 7 years after that. So there's a maximum. If you imagine someone making a gift and dying 7 years later, there's a maximum of a further 7 years. So 14 total years they could be looking back in to see what they can add to the estate.
I didn't know that. Okay, I didn't know they went back the extra 7 years as well. And is that to sort of identify gifts that should have been included full stop rather than because of the 7 years rule?
Yeah, I think they're kind of looking for unused nil-rate band, as I understand it. And also, yeah, to make sure that they kind of cover all of the liability there. It's a bit of a quirk of it, I think, but that's them's the breaks. So as part of this, I guess we need to cover potential exempt transfers. That's quite a key part of all of this. Now, essentially, if you make a gift, then the value of it is going to completely pass out of your estate as long as you live more than 7 years after making that gift, right? If you do pass away within those 7 years, then there's going to be some tax due, but it's not all bad news because there is something called taper relief available on this. And all that means is the amount of tax liability you have shrinks the longer you live after that gift is made. Now, I'm going to give you the percentages plus a numerical example just to kind of hammer it home. So if you make a gift and you pass away within the first 3 years, then 100% of that 40% IHT liability is going to be due. If you live between 3 and 4 years, then 80% is going to be due after making the gift. Between 4 and 5, it's going to be 60% of that 40% IHT liability. 5 and 6, 40%. 6 and 7, 20% of that tax liability. And then after 7 years, as I said, it passes out of the value of the estate completely. Now, just to make it more numerical, because I appreciate it's not the most easy, or you might not want to think about it too much. If you give a £5,000 gift, again, we're assuming all the allowances haven't been made and all your nil-rate band used up. If you give a gift to £5,000, if you die within that first 3 years, then that's £2,000 tax liability. That's 40%. And then as we're moving down, if you die between 3 and 4 years, then it's going to be £1,600 liability. 4 to 5 years is going to land you with a £1,200 tax liability. 5 and 6, £800. And then finally, if you live between 6 and 7 years after making the gift, £400 is all you're going to end up with tax-wise, after which there'll be no tax liability as it's passed out the value of your estate.
I had a question. So say you've been passed or given an asset worth £5,000. The person who gave you the asset passed away in less than 3 years ago. So 40% of that asset in tax is due. Does the inheritance tax payment have to come out of whatever was passed to you? Or is it sort of a personal bill that you can either pay through your current liquid assets, or you have to liquefy the asset before paying it? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, I believe it's more of an issue personally to you. So you don't have to liquidize that asset. You just have to pay the bill. I suppose it's like self-employed income tax. Whereas, I mean, it's not really. In that they issue you the bill and you kind of pay for it through savings or, you know, whatever. Yeah, as I understand it.
Can you decline a gift if you don't want to have the hassle of trying to pay the inheritance tax related to it?
You can. I believe you can. This is more off the cuff and going back a little way into my studies. But yes, I believe you can. And no, it's okay. And certainly with wills, I know you can do a deed of variation where you can collectively decide that you don't want to be passed down this money or gift. So yeah, I believe you can decline a gift.
Yeah.
If you don't want to hassle.
Yeah, it because I know of people who like have inherited people's holiday homes, for example, and those holiday homes are either in parts of the country that they don't really visit, but then now they have this inheritance tax bill, they don't really want to pay it, they don't want the hassle of trying to sell the place. You can decide to donate it to charity, which is what happens to a lot of the National Trust properties, that they're just donated to the National Trust.
Render the IHT bill lower.
The IHT, yep, exactly. Mm. So, like, because it's a charitable donation, I guess. So,
yeah,
perhaps that's how you can get around it.
I'm gonna agree with you. I think there. Yeah, I think you can decline it by means of donating it, but there are definitely kind of benefits if you really don't need it to donate to charity. Reduces the overall IHT liability by 4%. So, definitely worth thinking about.
So, an example of how you could use this information is, say, I'll give you an example of one of my friends. He grew up in Norfolk. His parents bought the house many years ago before he was born for a beautiful £15,000. That's what they bought the house for. Three bedrooms. 15.
I need a time machine.
I know, absolutely. And now it's worth well over £400,000. It's appreciated quite significantly. So a portion of it does go above the inheritance tax threshold, but also his parents obviously don't really care that it's worth more. In their minds, many years ago, they bought it for 15,000 and now they just live in it. So that sort of thinking that this might be subject to inheritance tax, should I plan for this? Is this something my children are going to have to deal with? Doesn't actually cross many people's minds. Mm. Unless you've got a particularly financially savvy parents or grandparents who do this kind of planning or have an accountant who does this kind of planning with them, not many people are going to actually be thinking about this kind of thing. So actually prompting your family and going, look, I'm not saying I expect anything, but have you thought about how, when you pass away, how your assets are going to be worth more than the inheritance tax threshold and how we're going to deal with that?
Kind of takes me on to a next kind of concept related to IHT, which is gifts with reservation, such without. Now, simply all a gift with reservation means is that if you make your gift and you still derive some benefit from it, whether that's interest from the income that you've given, or more prevalently or pertinently, continuing to live in the house rent-free if you gifted it to your child. If you continue to gain benefit from it after giving it as a gift, then it will be added back to your estate after you pass away. So that's not really, and there are some more technicalities to this that I'm not going to go into here, but in general it should probably be avoided where possible. Just to give you an example, I mean, using your friend's example, if they gifted their house, which is now worth more than, well, almost more than the nil rate bands, but they continue to live in it, then that's not really solving anything in terms of IHT. Whereas if they gifted it entirely, as long as they lived for 7 years after the gift's made, then that's going to pass out of the estate and that's going to help with a lot of that IHT liability that will inevitably fall on the kids.
Yeah, only if your friend lives in it as his primary residence. So if this is a gift that then becomes his second home, for example, and he doesn't use it as his primary residence, then it still is part of the inheritance tax estate. Because it's not being used as a primary residence.
And I guess another little IHT distinction is if it was made as a pet, potential exempt transfer, then the value of the estate when it was made as the pet is what is kind of taken for IHT purposes. Whereas if it's a gift with reservation, the value on death is used. So if you imagine like house prices appreciating, if they made a gift with reservation, not including your example, Sarah, then the massively increased house price upon death is what's going to be treated as for inheritance tax. So just something else to be aware of.
Mm-hmm. Every time you say pets, awesome. I keep thinking like actual pets and I'm like, here, I can do my dog.
I love dogs.
Aww. No, we already actually did our will, the final call about our will this morning, and the girls have their own little section of what happens to them on our passing. And
do they get the treats?
Well, we've provided them with money for treats. Yeah, so whoever is looking after them is responsible for buying them the treats with the money we've left them. But also, it's very cute. They've got their nicknames that we use, and then it's got their full their full little names. It's just like,
oh,
it's so cute.
Well, I never thought about that, adding pets to a will. But oh, yeah, it was sense, very important. It?
So, like, on my death, one of the girls goes back to my ex, but the other girl goes to my partner. And then on his death, the girls go to his parents. So, for example, like, there's loads of different... It was really weird to think about and talk about, to be honest. Like, we found the will...
Yeah.
Writing process, I didn't think it would bother us that much. We don't, you know, no kids. It's not like we've got loads of assets or anything like that. But how I think that almost made it a little bit more difficult because we'd have to split things between our siblings and their children. And it was like how to make that as fair as possible. And then we also actually had to speak to our different relatives and ask them sort of, would you want to be the, you know, the executor of our will? Would you be okay with that? And like, for example, my husband's brother was like, I'm really sorry. I find that too stressful. I don't really want that role. And, you know, it was quite interesting. So I can't imagine how difficult it is later on in life when you've got lots more factors to think about and dependents to worry about. I think it's quite a strange process. But if you own a house, I would definitely do it.
Absolutely. And I think potentially the most relevant part is thinking about these kind of exemptions and maximizing that, just to try and get that value of the estate down by maximizing that every year. You know, small gifts are quite useful. Annual exemption of £2,000 plus the carryover if you haven't used it. So just these little things to think about. Starting the conversation, it probably doesn't sit right with a lot of... It probably wouldn't sit right with me if I approached my parents tomorrow and was like, okay, come on then, what am I owed? And stuff like that. But it's just a really important thing to think about.
I come from an Indian family, and like, they're quite not obsessed with death, but it's not really a difficult subject for us to talk about. So like, I think I find it's easier in my family, for example, to approach that subject. And my dad's a chartered accountant as well, so for him, he sees it quite pragmatically. So having that conversation, I think in my family might be just a lot easier than it might be in your family. So if I'm okay to ask, how would you broach this subject, say, with your parents or grandparents?
Cool. As a kind of, with my financial advisor hat on, I'd be like, right, come on, let's have a look through and see what the estate's looking like and kind of work out any potential liabilities. But I think as a layman, or more as a son rather than a technical financial advisor, I'd go, firstly, I'd ask them, have you got insurance covered, life insurance covered? I think that's quite another one. I think you did one with Glenn, didn't you, recently? That's something really important that, A, we need as we get a little bit older, sort it out early. But B, I think it's important to make sure that your parents or your guardians, they also have it covered, because they might have outstanding mortgage. They might have, you know, various different things they need to provide for. So it's really important to get that sorted. And I think I just say, look, are you aware of these concepts? Because I can imagine that they might not, probably my dad would be. He's more sort of a financial mind than my mum, perhaps.
It is hard, I think, yeah. And I think you can sort of combine it with lots of other topics, actually. Like you just said, life insurance, like health insurance. You could talk about things like, I had something and it's gone. So talk about wills. Oh, power of attorney. So for example, if that, you can sort of combine it with that kind of just a planning conversation. Yeah. So let's plan everything and then step by step sort of approach all the different areas that need planning, rather than it's as just specific what we're going to do so I don't have to pay, which is actually what I said to my family. I literally just went, what we're going to do so I don't have to pay inheritance tax. And they were actually just, I think it's just easier talking about this kind of stuff with my family. But what other kind of things you can do to pay as little inheritance tax as you can?
Yeah, so again, you know, a really good question, and it will obviously depend on your own bespoke, unique circumstances. So none of this should be construed as advice. But in general, I think trusts are really key in mitigating inheritance tax. Now, we're going to do a separate episode, most likely, on trusts. But you can use these in general to provide for children if they're really young and pass it out of the estate. You can use them as a potential exempt transfer. So as long as you're going to hopefully live for 7 more years, touch wood, you can use those. And obviously giving these gifts and making use of these exemptions. But I think trusts, and you can do something called chargeable lifetime transfers. So the best way I can describe these is, this is the main tax you'll be paying when you make gifts into trusts. But it's only a tax rate of 20%. So if you know you're already above this nil rate band and you know that 40% tax bills likely come in someone's way, if you put it into any trust other than a bear trust, because that comes under a pet, I believe. Correct me if I'm sorry.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah. So any other trust, you can, we'll go through some of them, like discretionary interest in possession trusts, any of these types. Don't worry too much about what they mean. You'll be charged a 20% immediate tax charge. And then it's treated the same way as a potential exempt transfer. So if you, as long as you live 7 years after that gift is made, then you won't be charged anything more. But if you do die during that period, then you're going to have to pay a top up on top of that 20% to make it up. And that follows the same taper rate as the potential exempt. So, you know, 3 years, you've got to pay all of that 20% and so on and so forth. So, I mean, unless I've missed anything glaringly obvious,
nope.
I think that's my main strategies. Yeah.
So, yeah, basically what we're saying is have the conversation and start everybody thinking about what they're going to do in the situation and how to approach it. And the best way really is to talk to an accountant or an independent financial advisor who specializes in inheritance tax. A lot of independent financial advisors will give you a free consultation. So it's not going to be a massive outlay just to find out a little bit more about it and find out what it might cost to arrange. You can then decide later on whether you want to or not, but being more aware and educating yourself can actually be free. So we suggest doing that.
And if it gets too complicated, Medics Money is always there. I'll say that much. One last thing, Sarah. Is there anything we can say on the fact I think people say that inheritance tax is like a tax on the middle lower classes,
mm-hmm.
whereas the wealthy almost always avoid it?
Mm-hmm.
This is based on a random headline.
Because wealthier people have already got the means and the connections to manage their finances with qualified accountants, they've got trusts set up and things like that, it actually becomes easier for them to set up the pets, for example, early and not have to pay the inheritance tax. I don't want to use the word avoid, it's the legal jargon avoid rather than, but basically they've got the means and they've got the connections to be able to set it up in a way that they don't pay it. Whereas the lower middle income earners, where they're now starting to hit these thresholds because of fiscal drag and because of the appreciation of assets, they don't actually have that kind of disposable income and the kind of financial background and experience with people who help them, so accountants and lawyers, to then be able to comfortably navigate the complexities of setting up a trust or the complexities of setting their assets in a way that will help them. So they get stuck because they're basically trying to live their lives, they're trying to survive, and then, you know, the worst happens and they get hit with this massive tax bill.
Mm.
So I think that's why it's kind of a tax on that bracket. And another quote is that inheritance tax is a tax on those who don't trust their family. Yeah, which I found really funny. So if you trust people hold on to their assets, and then when they pass it on death, the people who get the assets are charged this tax. Whereas, like we talked about the 7-year rule, if you don't hold on to your assets and 7 years pass, it passes out of your estate and no one's liable for that inheritance tax. And yeah, that was another quote. So
do you know,
sorry, go on.
I know. I was going to, do you know the one of the major reasons why kind of pets and the cumulative principle exist? That 7-year rule?
No, I don't actually.
Ah, well, I believe it's mainly to prevent deathbed transfers. So if you know you're going to die, it's to prevent you from giving away everything and, you know, avoiding paying that inheritance tax.
Everything, don't they? They're like, I'm not going to let you win when you die.
Yeah.
You're not having that.
It'd be too easy if it was. So that's why they kind of give that taper relief to try and prevent that sort
and
of stuff.
And also, like, we're not even going to let you win when you get cancer. You're not even allowed to transfer it if you're terminally ill.
No relief. No. I guess they were nice with the LISA when you can withdraw that if you've got less than 12 months to live, but
yeah,
that's about what you're going to get.
Yeah. Absolutely right. Thank you, Matt. Thank you so much for your time and your technical prowess when it comes to these things. I really look forward to our trust episode. I think I'm very curious about the different types of trusts and what they mean. And I find trusts to be a bit of a grey area in my own knowledge base. So I'm really looking forward to learning more about them.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Syrah.
No problem. Take care.
See you soon. Bye.